This is Jordan Seculo. Today on Jay Seculo Live, House Democrats take the first formal step in drafting articles of impeachment against President Trump. My dad is back from the ICC. He'll be in the studio with us. And the Inspector General's report on FISA abuse and the Russia investigation is coming later today.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Seculo Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, folks. Jay Seculo, our chief counsel. My dad is back from The Hague and the International Criminal Court. Got back over the weekend, in the studio with us now. And I want to go right to him. We are following, of course, the first official steps by the House Judiciary Committee to draft articles of impeachment against President Trump. They say they'll be voting on those articles. They plan to later this week, and then a full House vote next week, then sending it over to the U.S. Senate. But, Dad, it's great to have you back. And people were following very closely what you were doing at the ICC. Yep. We had you on all 3 days you were there. We played some a lot for our Facebook and Periscope audience, some of the audio for our radio audience. We have more of that for today as well.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the, of course, watching the news now. We've got the hearing going on in the Judiciary Committee, and I feel like I've been out of touch for a week, but nothing's really changed. It sounds like looks like they're everything's the same. Or, you know, they're talking about
what's changed.
Yes,
polls have gone down for support of impeachment, and President Trump's polls have gone up in battleground states.
What's the status on that? We'll get to the other in a moment.
Yeah. So Axios did a report in three battleground states showing that impeachment is just backfiring totally for the. Democrats. And in fact, the three states are, it's pretty interesting to look in. There's three key battleground states. This is again Axios: Michigan, Pennsylvania, yep, and Wisconsin. Head to heads versus Biden versus Trump, it is again going way down from where it was. So Biden was actually leading in those. It's now becoming statistical dead heats, and we know when the president gets into dead heats in those Midwestern states with Democrats, he pulls out the day usually. So even the leading Democrat, though he's not leading any state polls, the leading Democrat contender, Joe Biden, is going down in the key states that President Trump won, you know, Wisconsin, Michigan, and of course, Pennsylvania.
Well, I was, of course, while you all were dealing with your domestic politics here, I was dealing with international matter at the International Criminal Court of The Hague for a appeals chamber hearing in the situation in the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan. And what has happened in that case, and I know you talked about it some, but I was there through our European Center for Law and Justice. Our ECLJ has standing with all these international tribunals. And we've actually been involved with ICC litigation for almost a decade, really a decade. And this particular one is a big one because in this particular case, the prosecutor has sought to get jurisdiction over U.S. military and intelligence agencies, including the CIA, for alleged war crimes in Afghanistan or at Guantanamo Bay. So they actually had the victims' lawyers, and there was one group of victims' lawyers that talked about what the Taliban had been doing to the civilian populace of Afghanistan, which was quite quite moving testimony. But then you had the terrorist lawyers. That's what they are. The terrorist lawyers were there complaining about process. One of those terrorist lawyers had significant involvement in the death of dozens and dozens and dozens of Americans, soldiers. And I kept saying, you know, what about their due process? So the arguments were, I think, well received. That was one thing I will say. The court was very professional. The staff was excellent. And we were received fairly. We got questions, which is normal in these kind of process. When we come back from the break, I'll give you more of a look at what that actually means. And what's at stake. If you want to talk to about that or talk about what's going on in Washington, you give us a call. Jordan will take your numbers now.
Yeah, 1-800-684-3110. Remember, too, it's a matching challenge month. We've got those briefs going up to the Supreme Court as well, waiting to hear back on the Supreme Court there in our cases where we represent President Trump, too.
We're going to know Friday on the case involving the district attorney from New York. We'll probably know before we go on air.
Yep, so folks, it's a very busy time. This is not like fundraising to get ready for the next year. This is fundraising to use right now. And your donation is effectively doubled. Matching challenge. Donate today. ACLJ.org.
At the ACLJ, we remain committed to protecting life. Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion business in America, is killing unborn children and then selling their organs. Federal law bans the sale of aborted babies, but the abortion industry is exploiting a massive loophole. We're demanding Congress investigate Planned Parenthood's gruesome practices and close this loophole. And we're continuing our fight in court against Planned Parenthood, appealing a disturbing decision that backs Planned Parenthood. At the same time, we're engaged in key Supreme Court cases protecting life. We could not mount this battle without your support. And right now, your gift to the ACLJ will be doubled through our matching challenge. A $20 gift becomes $40. A $50 gift, $100. Stand with the ACLJ now in the fight for life. Online at ACLJ.org. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org.
Back to the broadcast. Everyone taking your calls, 800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. So let me tell you what was going on at The Hague. So there was, at one time, I counted 23 or 25 lawyers actually in the hearing room. The hearing room is huge. You'll notice I'm wearing headsets.
Active lawyers. That's not like just watching. That's active.
That's correct. And you'll notice also that we were wearing headsets. The courtroom is so large that even with their system, you have to have the headsets working in order to proceed and to understand the proceedings. And sometimes it's also translated into different languages, particularly English for some is a second language, French for others is the second language, and some of the lawyers spoke in French. But the hearing involved the issue of jurisdictional reach of U.S. citizens, and that my second day of hearing, so it was a three-day hearing. It was Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. We arrived on Monday morning. We were immediately went to work at refining the arguments, and you're refining the arguments literally until those arguments are finished. Till the day before, the night before, you're working on, because every word makes a difference. And it was interesting that we got responses, and I think they're going to work on putting this together. But the Friday, we did not speak on Friday, but you have to attend, obviously, because they can ask you questions. But there was these sections where each of the victims groups went 10 minutes. And I think in each of those, we were referenced multiple times. The prosecutor referenced us multiple times. And I'm going to get a montage of all of those representations where they say either Jay Sekulow or the ECLJ during that proceeding. You could add a little bit of the question, too, because here's the thing. It shows you the impact you can have. Now, we had in, just so you know what we had in working on this case, in country. We had one of our former law clerks who is now practicing law in Europe. We had Mark Goldfeder, who works out of Atlanta. Andy Economo, who you know from this broadcast, works out of both the Atlanta office and the office in our media center. We had me. We had Stuart Roth. We had Miles Terry. And I know I'm leaving somebody. David Benjamin from our office in Jerusalem. Shahari Argill from our office in Virginia Beach, Skip Ash. Yes. That's how many lawyers we had working on this. In fact, I don't know if we have the pictures loaded, but there were pictures of them, everybody in their robes, to give you kind of a sense of what this really involved. But I will tell you this, it was a moving experience in the sense that you're representing the interests of your country. We're not there representing the United States, although the legal position that we advocated was the position that the United States advocates. But again, we were there through our European Center for Law and Justice, and I had the opportunity to appear twice, both on Wednesday and Thursday. Wednesday, no questions, because it was a very technical issue on jurisdiction. Thursday was the merits. And the questioning, I got four questions from two judges, which in that scenario, just so you understand, because it's not like the U.S. system, that was actually a lot of questions. Jordan, you've studied this.
Yeah.
That's a lot of interaction, and then we were referenced a lot.
Right. Usually in these proceedings, it's very much like the European court style of system where you make your case, you get your statement, and though the judges reserve time for questioning, it's very rare that they use it. It's also rare that the same person would get asked questions from two different judges or follow-up questions by the same judge on these issues, especially when you're talking about Dad having 23 potential people to question. Yep. Those judges decided, and we I haven't seen the full, but did they ask a lot of other questions to other people?
No. I mean, there was about three or four of us out of the many, many
out of the 23
that got questions.
Yeah. So let's this is, I want to first play, this is day two for our radio audience. This really
this
gets to the heart
day.
Of defending the interests of our armed forces and our U.S. troops and intelligence agents who served valiantly in the Afghanistan conflict. Take a listen. This is day two at the International Criminal Court. My dad, Jay Sekulow, with those opening statement.
I'd like to invite the Council of the European Center for Law and Justice.
Thank you, Mr. President, Your Honors, and it's again a pleasure to appear before you today. The pretrial chamber's decision that it was not in the interests of justice to authorize an investigation in the situation in the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan was based on the following three considerations. The fact that significant time had elapsed between the alleged crimes and the request. The likelihood that relevant evidence and suspects would no longer be available. And the lack of cooperation obtained by the prosecutor. The prosecutor argued that these are broader considerations that did not need to be analyzed in this instance. We disagree, because the lack of cooperation in this case was actually based on general principles of customary international law and specific treaties between the United States and the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan. There is no customary norm whereby states can delegate their criminal jurisdiction over foreign nationals to a third party. In fact, the customary norm is just the opposite. Such delegation is unacceptable. A state's criminal jurisdiction over foreign nationals is a bilateral issue between the state and the accused person's state of nationality. A state cannot delegate that jurisdiction to another state without the consent of the accused states of nationality. A state also cannot delegate its criminal jurisdiction over foreign nationals to a tribunal whose jurisdiction has been rejected by the accused person's state of nationality. Article 34B of the Vienna Convention expressly provides the default rule for situations such as this one, the attempt to impose a multilateral treaty obligation on a non-party state. And I quote, "The treaty to which both states are parties governs their mutual rights and obligations." And in this instance, the bilateral jurisdictional agreements between Afghanistan and the United States are the lex specialis that govern their relationship. It is not in the interest of justice to ignore customary international norms. It is not in the interest of justice to override explicit agreements between sovereign states. And it is not in the interest of justice to waste the court's resources while ignoring the reality of principled non-cooperation.
So that gave you, that's a very short version, very good edit version of what we said, and that the interest of justice is the standard of review. Now, I am optimistic that, although I think that they're going to open up an investigation in Afghanistan, I think we were successful on the United States should either be a carve-out or they'll set it up for another hearing. There could be a full hearing just on the jurisdiction issue.
Yeah, the U.S. issue.
Which yes.
We raised intentionally because the court has not wanted to address that before.
This is the first time in the history of this court that someone has gotten to the floor and engaged with judges. You haven't seen that yet, where we actually engage with judges on this issue of the U.S. being reached by the ICC. That has never happened in U.S. history where judges engaged us until that would have been on Thursday. That was a historic moment. Yeah.
Some of the Facebook and Periscope viewers have seen that, but for the majority of our audience on radio, they haven't gotten to see listen to that exchange yet. And that's really when you get into. I mean, yes, this is complicated, but this is about how you this is how you snub out even the start of the ICC, an international criminal court, trying to investigate and potentially bring charges against American troops when we're not a party to this treaty, which established this court. And so you want to snub this out from the start. If it leads to a second hearing on jurisdiction, that's fine too, because it's got them thinking maybe they're wrong. Maybe this is too big of a step for the ICC. The ICC is a court constantly looking to be taken seriously, and also whether or not it has failed. Has it failed as an institution? Because it's gone on for, you know, since 2002, it's been in effect. Yep. And it has had a very low rate of convictions, only about 10 cases.
Yep.
I think they're on their 10th after Afghanistan.
But I will say that the staff, Jordan, was very professional.
Yeah, it is. It's just they have not.
It's tough.
These are long. If you conduct a war crimes investigation, how they used to do it, which I think is how they should do it still,
is a special tribunal.
Like my former professor, Goldstone, he was the head prosecutor for the special investigation and the special tribunal into Yugoslavia and Rwanda. It made very focused. There were no good courts to use in those countries. There were bad actors on both sides that committed horrendous crimes. Rwanda, genocide, and then in Yugoslavia you had ethnic fighting. And because of the civil nature of the conflict, the civil war nature,
yep,
there was no court system. So even if there were court systems before, they didn't have one anymore to adjudicate. This just goes back to the Nuremberg issue, really.
Yep.
But the ICC has tried to do something different. So far, it's not really working. And I think that we can actually probably help instruct the ICC on, if they want to be effective, not for the U.S., we don't want to be a part of it, but for other countries, how to do it. Because they're not really, I don't think, doing it the right way.
So one person said that they got up at 3 o'clock in the morning to watch because of the time difference. That
we were into it.
You told them. Jordan said people were into it.
Defending our troops.
Joyce said, when we know the outcome, 53 days. Probably within 53 days. And Carol on Facebook said, she's the one who said she got up early. Kate said, thank you and the ACLJ for all your hard work protecting our military. We couldn't do it without you. We're able to get those 8 lawyers over there working on this because of your support of the ACLJ.
And do you think Friday we're going to know it from the Supreme Court?
I will know about the president's case at the Supreme Court on Friday. Is my it's go, well, it's in conference Friday morning. It may not be by the time we go in there, but I'll tell you what, if it is granted in the afternoon, we'll go live to update.
All right, folks, it's busy time. Matching challenge. Support the work of the ACLJ. Double the impact of your donation at ACLJ.org right now. We'll be right back.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org. At the ACLJ, we remain committed to protecting life. Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion business in America, is killing unborn children and then selling their organs. Federal law bans the sale of aborted babies, but the abortion industry is exploiting a massive loophole. We're demanding Congress investigate Planned Parenthood's gruesome practices and close this loophole. And we're continuing our fight in court against Planned Parenthood, appealing a disturbing decision that backs Planned Parenthood. At the same time, we're engaged in key Supreme Court cases protecting life. We could not mount this battle without your support. And right now, your gift to the ACLJ will be doubled through our matching challenge. A $20 gift becomes $40, a $50 gift, $100. Stand with the ACLJ now in the fight for life. Online at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back. We're talking about the hearing going on right now in the Judiciary Committee. We're also talking about the hearing we just completed at the ICC. And I will tell you that this was a... it was quite an honor for me, I will tell you, that to do this. And as I said, the court was very, very professional, very respectful, as were the other lawyers. Even when you disagree there, it's more of the British system, so everything's quite polite. Our radio audience hasn't heard it yet, but our Facebook, Periscope, social media platforms, TV, saw just now the response to a series of questions. The question we're going to play in a moment kind of goes to the heart of this case, and the judge that's asking, and Jordan, you want to talk about the Jess Kogans, which is, she says what that principle is?
Yeah, so Jess Kogans is this principle. There's customary international law, and that's like, you know, law that basically we've all come to, for the most part, the world has agreed to follow. So customs, and you don't usually deviate from customs, but there's a level above that. There's Jess Kogans. There's certain things that are just so illegal, so bad, so wrong, that any deviation from them, that's the exact definition, any deviation from them is a crime that can be prosecuted. It is a violation of international law. An example would be an intentional genocide of a group of people, a government... actually, like what happened to these Yazidi women, saying, take them as brides, rape them, kill them, whatever you want with them. These intentional, massive actions. That's what level goes from a customary international law, which is custom but not always enforceable, to something like Jess Kogans, which means this is always, regardless of where you are, and I think we all agree on what they are, this is always a international war crime.
Yeah, so what happened here was she asked me, I talked about that the United States had a principled response to why they were not cooperating with the ICC, which she, because I think of the translation a little bit, confused with the principle of non-cooperation. It's not a principle of non-cooperation. It's principled non-cooperation. But it was a great question, and we're going to get to see the answer. So this is for our radio audience. The question is a little hard to hear, but you'll get it, and then you'll see hear my response. For those on our social media platforms and TV, you're going to see it.
You have talk about a principle coming from customary law, the principle of non-cooperation. In light of that, and in light that the prohibition of torture is a jus cogens norm, which under the provisions of the Vienna Convention and treaties has the highest hierarchy, and it's mandatory for all the countries, this kind of norms cannot be disregarded, and of course, coming from this hierarchy emerges a lot of obligations erga omnes to investigate and to prosecute. That said, do you think it is possible to reconcile this high hierarchy positioned norm, jus cogens, to prohibition of torture, with the so-called principle of no cooperation of states? Of course, I will need maybe a kind of academic response, because you are not the representative of any state.
I am not.
Okay,
To be clear, thank you. The what we're saying, first of all, is that it's not a principle of non-cooperation. It's principled non-cooperation. In other words, that the United States, through its many administrations, through its policy statements, through the issues that have been raised even recently, have expressed consistently concern over jurisdiction of this court over non-member states. That would include nationals. I also think it's important, and I didn't want to spend time on it today because I'm conscious of the court's time, that the United States has a very comprehensive military justice system and a very comprehensive criminal justice system. And these cases that do arise from time to time, and it's interesting because the Office of the Prosecutor relied primarily on published documents from the Senate Oversight Committee, House Oversight Committee, that have reviewed when there's been issues. So what I'm not saying that the United States or any other country is immune from something not going as planned or for something to take place that would be a violation of international law. But I'm not willing to concede that the only way to handle that would be for jurisdiction of this court for a non-party state.
That was actually a critically important issue of why the United States was not participating. And Karen on Facebook said, Jay, does the matching challenge help with the ICC case? The answer to that is absolutely. I'll talk more about that as we go into the break. But yeah, absolutely.
It's not done. Even though
No. Although it was the highest chamber, it's going to go back for other findings. We may have a hearing just on the jurisdiction issue. I suspect we probably will. We've got a call coming in on the ICC. Then we'll move to the political matters domestically. Let's go to Sharon.
Sharon's calling from California on line 3. Sharon, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, Sharon.
I want to say thank you. Thank you for this phenomenal team that went to The Hague to fight for our men and women in uniform. And I am grateful for President Trump also backing financially and in other ways our troops. And here you are. You brought to the forefront an issue that I don't know that many of us were aware of and are going to battle. And I am so appreciative. I'm so appreciative. And but I do have a question.
Yes.
What is the ICC and what is their jurisdiction?
So the International Criminal Court is a multi-country, multi-state party court that was set up to handle international crimes, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. That's number one. Number two, it was developed by what's called the Rome Statute. That's what called it into existence. Various countries signed on to the Rome Statute. The United States did not sign that statute because of concerns on jurisdictional reach. But in this particular case, the prosecutor is asserting that you could obtain jurisdiction over the United States. Now, this is what's important here. You could obtain jurisdiction over the United States because the alleged incidents arise out of actions in Afghanistan. Afghanistan did sign on to the Rome Statute and is a member. However, as we'll see later in the arguments, and we'll do more of this in the days ahead, and we'll do a whole special on this before probably around Christmas. The argument really focused on that there were agreements, bilateral agreements between the United States and Afghanistan, multilateral agreements called status of force agreements, which gave exclusive jurisdiction from Afghanistan to the United States. So they could not take that jurisdiction then and throw it off to the International Criminal Court. This was at the highest chamber, but I suspect that this will be round one. I think we'll be back there. And like I said, we were well-received. I would disagree with a lot of the opinions that come out. Some of them we agree with. I mean, she just made a finding in a case involving Israel again for the third time. The prosecutor said there's no case. And yet the pretrial chamber keeps kicking it back. In this particular case, the pretrial chamber said there was no case. She keeps on appealing it. She's the right to do it. Her deputies were there. She was not, which was not shocking, I guess. But anyways, we're moving forward on that. And your support for the ACLJ, the question was asked, does the matching challenge help with the ICC case? You bet it does. Your support of the ACLJ keeps us in court and keeps it going. And yes, it makes a huge difference for the 8 lawyers that were there engaged in this issue for a month.
Yeah, it keeps our European Center for Law and Justice going, which keeps our UN status going, which is why we're able to appear at the ICC on behalf of U.S. Armed Forces, their interest, and then intelligence agents, why we're able there to defend their interest. It's why we're able to bring this broadcast to you. It's why we're able to file at the Supreme Court and do all the government affairs work we do as well. Support the work of the ACLJ. And you know we're going to get those holiday cases coming in too as well this month of December. ACLJ.org. Double the impact your donation right now. Donate today. ACLJ.
At the ACLJ, we remain committed to protecting life. Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion business in America, is killing unborn children and then selling their organs. We're demanding Congress investigate Planned Parenthood's gruesome practices and close this loophole. We could not mount this battle without your support, and right now, your gift to the ACLJ will be doubled through our matching challenge. Stand with the ACLJ now in the fight for life, online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
So we're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Of course, if you've got more calls and questions about the ICC case, my dad will answer those now that he's back in the studio with us, talking about the International Criminal Court. He's also back, so he, as one of the lead attorneys for President Trump, I'm on that legal team as well. We have not, of course, the White House counsel has decided not to be involved in this portion of the process because we do believe this has been a scam and like a hoax and just no reason to engage it, to even give it the honor of having the White House counsel or the President's counsel be there and participate in these hearings. Plus, the House attorneys from the Republican side, Stephen Castor, is doing a good job. We'll get my dad's thoughts on that after he was out of the country, and we heard from those law professors last week. Now, what we're at, I want to go to Than first before we play the Castor bite. Than, we are in the final stage. This is it before they draft the articles and vote on them later this week in the committee.
All indications from Capitol Hill, Jordan, are that those articles will be drafted in the next couple of days and probably available for people to review, maybe even reported at a committee by the end of this week. And on the floor, I would say middle to late next week is probably the earliest. But Jordan, just to underscore a point that you made here, I mean, I think today's proceedings have really validated the decision by the White House to not participate in this process. I'll just give you two points. There were counsel from the House Judiciary Committee and the House Intelligence Committee that were supposed to present their reports. Jordan, for the first set, Barry Burke was presenting on behalf of House Judiciary Democrats. They released him before anybody had a chance to offer questions of him. Chairman Nadler viewed him as someone who is testifying to the committee, but not a witness, and therefore not eligible for cross-examination. Just absolutely ridiculous. And then second, Jordan, we saw a stunt that we had seen previously in the House Intelligence Committee where they let the House Democrat counsel, Daniel Goldman, present for the Democrats, and then they took an extended break before they let the GOP counsel present. Of course, that is meant to let the narrative sink in. So this was not a forum in which valid participation from the president's counsel or really anyone on his side of the ledger would have been received.
Just quickly. So the counsel for the Democrats, for the majority, for the judiciary, made his presentation then. And unlike Castor and Goldman, who will have to answer questions from members of Congress today after their statements and presentations, does not get cross-examined at all?
Exactly correct, jeez, Jordan. I mean, Steve Castor is representing the Republicans for both the Intelligence Committee and the Judiciary Committee, but Barry Burke was representing Democrats for the Judiciary Committee. Jordan, he made a 30-minute presentation, and did not have to take a single question from either Republicans or Democrats. He left the room before that period started.
Was that part of some H-660 rule, or was that just some pull by Nadler?
Here's the part of H-660 that it was. It was not spelled out in there, but that part that we've read repeatedly, Jordan, where it says the Committee on the Judiciary is authorized to promulgate additional procedures as it deems necessary, that was a procedure that Chairman Nadler...
Nadler promulgated one. Oh, he's our counsel, not really a witness. All right.
How many times do we tell people, Jordan, that would happen?
And that's why the White House counsel's not participating, because they wouldn't have even been able to cross-examine. That's why we're not participating either, though. It does, like, we'd have a role as President's kind of outside the White House counsel because though they've talked about bringing in Mueller, which we were handling, they haven't done that so officially yet. Here is what Castor had to say to kind of open up his statement. It's a quick and a short one, and we'll talk about it when we come back from this first break. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110, both on the ICC and this final kind of impeachment round. But take a listen to Castor, Bite 28.
To impeach a president who 63 million people voted for over eight lines in a call transcript is baloney.
I mean, that's what we're talking about here, folks. Impeaching a president who won. I don't even care how many people voted for. He won. He was duly elected. And you're going to impeach him over eight lines in a call transcript. Which, by the way, they're now moving away from that. It's moving towards some theory of obstruction by going to court, which you have a constitutional right. We all do. Have a right to at least take our issue to court. We may not win, but we have a right to take the issue to court and go all the way up through the court process. How is that obstruction? Again, we'll talk about it when we come back. We're doing all this work. Support the work. ACLJ.org, matching challenge.
At the ACLJ, we remain committed to protecting life. Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion business in America, is killing unborn children and then selling their organs. Federal law bans the sale of aborted babies, but the abortion industry is exploiting a massive loophole. We're demanding Congress investigate Planned Parenthood's gruesome practices and close this loophole. And we're continuing our fight in court against Planned Parenthood, appealing a disturbing decision that backs Planned Parenthood. At the same time, we're engaged in key Supreme Court cases protecting life. We could not mount this battle without your support. And right now, your gift to the ACLJ will be doubled through our matching challenge. A $20 gift becomes $40. A $50 gift, $100. Stand with the ACLJ now in the fight for life. Online at ACLJ.org. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org.
Today, we cover the ICC, a little bit of the this House Judiciary Committee hearing where they're hearing from attorneys. And Than has pointed out that the Democrats attorney for the House Judiciary Committee got to make a 30-minute case on why they should impeach President Trump, but because of the procedural rules allowed under their impeachment resolution that only Democrats voted for, House Resolution 660, they made up a rule that he could not be questioned or cross-examined. No one got to question him from the Republican side or Democrat side. And people are questioning why the White House counsel's not there, because it's stunts like that. They would have been just sitting there not being able to ask questions to the House Judiciary Committee's top lawyer, the guy who's going to be helping draft, who is, I'm sure, currently drafting the articles of impeachment. So, Than, I want to break down, we know the Inspector General report is supposed to be released later today. We're going to talk about that in a bit. I want to take people's calls on the impeachment as well, 1-800-684-3110, what to expect on the Inspector General's report and what not to expect. But first, lay out the week for us. We expect, okay, this hearing happens today. It's going to go long. Then we expect, will there be any more hearings, or will they just gather as a committee to draft articles?
Yeah, the best guess, Jordan, what it looks like from Chairman Nadler's comments is there will not be any technically any more hearings. Now, the committee will have to meet again, Jordan, to consider articles should they draft them over the next couple of days, as he has indicated they are. So that would technically be considered a markup, Jordan, where the committee would meet to vote those articles out of committee. And if I had to guess, I would say something like Thursday or Friday is probably a reasonable guess for that. That would set up floor consideration for next week. Now, remember, Jordan, I know you know this, but our listeners are going to need to be prepared for this next week. There's going to be a bunch of things coming down the deadline next week. You've got to get the impeachment hearing off the floor if they're going to do it before Christmas. You've also got to get a funding bill passed by December 20th to avoid a government shutdown. And there's also rumors, Jordan, that they might be pretty close, believe it or not, to a deal on the USMCA trade agreement. So all of that would have to be done. And that's why Nancy Pelosi has told her members they need to be prepared to stay in town over the weekend through December 22nd before leaving for the Christmas break.
All right. So, I mean, if things go as planned, Democrats will impeach President Trump before Christmas.
That's what it looks like. That's what it looks like. And I would add one thing to that, Jordan. I would also keep an eye on negotiations between Leader McConnell and Leader Schumer in the Senate. It looks like, at least on an initial question of when they might take it up in the Senate, they might be close to unanimous consent agreement to at least hold that over till the holidays. I think a larger agreement on what the framework of a trial would look like in the Senate, I think that's still a long way off, but that initial decision to wait until after the holidays to take it up, I think they're pretty close on that.
On the Senate side. But the House is going to try to do it right 3 days before Christmas.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just, again, no wonder President Trump has gone from, and he never polls that great. He always underpolls. But he was being beat by Biden and a lot of other Democrat candidates in some of the tougher swing states for Republicans. Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And in the last days between December 2nd and 5th, that same polling group who had him down 10 points to Biden in those states now has got him up 5 and 6 points over Biden. This is all during this impeachment, as people realize what is being done to the president. And those are states that if Democrats lose, they have no chance. No chance. They cannot win the White House. Take a listen again to the House Republicans attorney making the case against impeaching President Trump. Bite 42.
The substantive case for impeaching President Trump as a result of an artificial, arbitrary, and political schedule relies heavily on ambiguous facts, presumptions, and speculation. It's early warned here, too, that impeachments have been based on proof, not presumptions. The Democrats do not have the proof.
The Democrats have no proof. We talked about this, Harry. It's an impeachment based off of policy disputes, presumptions, and hearsay.
Precisely. So effectively, that means the Democrats do not have a case. But it's also equally true they have never had a case, except two things: their dislike for President Trump and their dislike for Trump voters. And so they have constructed a claim out of whole cloth. In other words, basically out of fiction multiplied by additional fictions. But yet, the Democrats expect the American people to take them seriously. We have the spectacle of Nancy Pelosi claiming that she prays for the president every day. The question, of course, becomes, at what church is she praying for the president every day? And more likely than not, it is a church that is largely a figment of her own imagination. You know, and many of these claims are simply imaginary.
I mean, whatever, you know, she's praying for, not praying for, Nancy Pelosi, I think, unfortunately, I wouldn't say so. She kind of like decides when to use her faith. She usually never responds to questions about that. And part of that's because she's a Catholic who's in dispute with the Catholic Church on abortion.
Exactly. Yeah.
Suddenly she's on her knees praying for the president. And that's why people question her motives, because she's a tough, hard-nosed, I'll give her credit for that, politician. She wouldn't be Speaker of the House and gotten it back after even losing it once if she wasn't. For her, everything is about politics. Every statement she makes outside of her personal life, and we don't know anything about, you know, we know her as the public figure, Nancy Pelosi, that she is a politician.
Yeah, she's the consummate politician. And as far as her faith goes, you know, Nancy Pelosi is a prime example of what is called a cafeteria Catholic. She goes through and picks, okay, I like this, I like this, I'll have some of that, but no, I don't want that. So that she you know, divorces herself from the very concept of hate, but at the same time is okay with abortion. You know, what we're witnessing, though, Jordan, in Congress this week, it's not an exercise in the law or an exercise of constitutional principles. This is an exercise in political targeting. And the framers of the Constitution, they sought to avoid impeachment as a political tool to remove a president, where basically the president serves at the pleasure of the Congress. And yet that's exactly what's going on. And you look back to the impeachment votes on Clinton and Nixon. Both of those times, there was bipartisan investigation. It was fair. And both of those presidents, both parties agreed, had done something illegal. with Clinton, it was lying under oath. So there was never a question of, has the president done wrong? Both parties said, yes, the president's done wrong. The question was, what do we do about it? Not whether the president has committed something that's illegal. But that's not the case now. And contrary to Democrat claims where they say that the evidence is uncontested, it's only uncontested to the extent that they have not allowed testimony to come in to contest it.
Yeah, I mean, again, I want to go right to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. People have been waiting to talk about this. This is an interesting question. Zach, we're going to get you a copy of my book, The Next Red Wave. You've been holding on a long time to ask this one. In from North Carolina, online one. Zach, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, guys. Thanks for all you do.
Thanks, Zach.
I'll get right to it. It just seems like we were supposed to get some type of fairness here. They were going to, you know, give the Republicans some time to call witnesses, but it doesn't seem like that's happened. And you know, I'm just wondering if Adam Schiff will be, you know, able to be called forth.
Adam Schiff will not be able to be called for in the House. The Senate, I don't know. Some are saying they're not going to do that because they just don't want to give him the time and to even have in the Senate to continue on with his because he also the information there that if they can, you know, the quicker they can get this done, the better. Not that they'll rush the process, but then the issue is that I think the Republicans, they got the only witness they actually got was one of the professors, Jonathan Turley. And he was not even a Trump supporter. In the Intelligence Committee hearings, the witnesses that they asked for were all witnesses that Democrats initially brought in. They just wanted to bring them back where Democrats did not think that they'd be as helpful for their case. So those weren't really Republican witnesses. So I'd say in the entire time, Republicans have gotten one, and it was during probably the least important day. Though maybe the day that turned the American people even more against this impeachment was when you had three out of four of these ivory tower law professors just so nasty with their hatred against President Trump. And as Harry said, it was also this, you could tell it wasn't just hatred against President Trump, but his voters and supporters. Really, they've only gotten one to answer Zach's question, and it was one of the professors.
They got one witness, and that was a Democrat who opposed the president, Jordan. And honestly, Chairman Schiff denied several witnesses that Republicans suggested, even though he had called them previously behind closed doors, Jordan. But I still think today is the best evidence of it, because if you look back just 2 or 3 weeks ago, Chairman Schiff said he was going to be here today to present this report to the House Judiciary Committee. The fact that he sent an attorney to do it for him, Jordan, I think that might be the most telling evidence yet that there's not substance there, and he didn't want to have to take questions on it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he's going to have to, you know, I mean, Adam Schiff's an attorney, but he's going to use Daniel Goldman to try and dance around all of this about not being able to point to, you know, what is the abuse here? Even though you don't have this criminal law in the books to impeach, and it's very broad. What are you doing it over? Exactly. And where are you basing it on? Take your calls. 1-800-684-3110. Call now.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. At the ACLJ, we remain committed to protecting life. Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion business in America, is killing unborn children and then selling their organs. Federal law bans the sale of aborted babies, but the abortion industry is exploiting a massive loophole. We're demanding Congress investigate Planned Parenthood's gruesome practices and close this loophole. And we're continuing our fight in court against Planned Parenthood, appealing a disturbing decision that backs Planned Parenthood. At the same time, we're engaged in key Supreme Court cases protecting life. We could not mount this battle without your support. And right now, your gift to the ACLJ will be doubled through our matching challenge. A $20 gift becomes $40. A $50 gift, $100. Stand with the ACLJ now in the fight for life. Online at ACLJ.org.
We're going to take questions on the ICC. Questions on. We're going to play some more from my dad, who again is back with us, and more from for our radio audience. Facebook and Periscope audience has seen it, but we got millions listening on radio who haven't gotten to listen to as much of the argument. And we're going to prepare some more videos for Facebook and online ACLJ.org, so you can watch the argument if you want to see all the parts that he's involved in. We'll have that. We're going to even have parts where all the times the other attorneys are bringing us up and disagreeing with our position as well. So I want to take a call on the ICC first. Then we'll play some more, another question from one of the ICC judges. This is their top court, to my dad. And then we'll take another call on what's happening with this impeachment battle. But right before I do that, Than, IG report, I'll go around the table for this in a minute. We had 20 seconds each. IG report is expected to be released to the public later today. What we're hearing, even from people like Attorney General Barr's, yes, there'll be some interesting parts, but the IG, he doesn't make criminal charges against anyone ever, and two, did not have full access to like the CIA and what else was going on.
Yeah, I think that's correct, Jordan. I mean, I think the fact that James Comey was already referred for prosecution shows you that the inspector general found an awful lot. I do think there will be a narrative in the media that because he didn't prosecute something he cannot do, that it is a win for those who are opposing the president. I would definitely reject that. Jordan, I would encourage people to read all the way through it. I think this is going to be very uncomfortable, let's say, for many inside the intelligence
community. Oh, yeah. Because even if it's not criminal, it's going to show spying on American, you know, Wes, the president, unlike the law professor last week, should not have been impeached over his tweet saying the Obama administration was spying on him, because they were.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he spoke the truth. The other thing about the report coming out, you know, the inspector general, he can only interview people who still work for the Department of Justice, people who no longer work there. Think of Peter Strzok, for example. He can't compel them to testify, unlike the U.S. attorney in Connecticut, which is, you know, impaneled a grand jury. So whatever comes out, it's going to be limited to the extent that the IG could only ask people that are still in the department or who voluntarily came forward. I don't think it's going to be an explosive bombshell, but I think there are going to be some parts of this 400-page plus document that's going to make the FBI and some people in the Department of Justice look less than stellar.
Harry, your thoughts on, you know, I think people always expect too much from the IG reports. That's one thing, is they get too hyped up. They're IGs, they're very careful, and they're not prosecutors.
I think that's correct, and I think IGs have very limited power, and as a consequence, they cannot generally produce explosive reports, but I think the IG's report will support the narrative that the FBI and members of the DOJ made some mistakes.
So this is insane what's going on right now. Than, just explain it to people. So that attorney for the House Judiciary Committee, and they're fighting about this right now in the committee, for the House Judiciary Committee, Burke, who was able to make a presentation like the other attorneys representing Democrats and Republicans today, but did not have to answer questions or be cross-examined, is now cross-examining the Republican attorney. So the House Democrats attorney, who didn't have to take cross-examine after his 30-minute opening remark, is now cross-examining the Republican attorney.
Jordan, this is unbelievable. He is now questioning the witness by whom he sat next to and testified alongside of. Look, Barry Burke and Steve Castor represented the Judiciary Republicans in presenting the first report, and Chairman Nadler said that he was a witness. Therefore, he was not bound by rules that said you can't impugn the president. So he was allowed to do that. Then after he left the room, Chairman Nadler shifted his tune and said that he wasn't a witness, he was staff, which means he couldn't have impugned the president. But Jordan, here's where it gets really bad. After Steve Castor and Daniel Goldman presented 45-minute reports on behalf of the Intelligence Committee, Barry Burke took a seat next to Jerry Nadler and started questioning the GOP's counsel, Steve Castor. So remember, Burke and Castor testified next to each other. One of them had to answer questions. The other one got to go up on the dais and question the GOP attorney. What a circus, Jordan.
A total circus. They still have not figured it out. And by the way, this is just as Jerry Nadler at his worst. It's why letting him hold these hearings, I don't think Democrats ever want to do. He's just kind of got the position by being in Congress so long. They tried to take it away from him. They did for the most part. Adam Schiff got it. Not so much better. But Nadler always things out of control, always making these procedural arguments that are questionable by both sides. But, Dad, we got to call it about the ICC.
Yep.
We'll have plenty of time to talk about this hearing. This hearing, I mean, they still can't figure even out what they're doing. I guess they're going to let him start questioning, even though he got to be a presenter and questioner.
Yeah, there you go.
That's due process. Yeah. Julie's got a question about the ICC, and we've got another one of those bites to play for your case.
Hey, Julie.
Hi, Jordan. I'm so grateful and proud of you for representing our military and our CIA in front of the European Criminal Court. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And I will definitely give as much as I can during the matching challenge this month.
Thank you.
You're welcome. My question is, if we set a precedent by giving the International Criminal Court jurisdiction over the military and the CIA of the United States, how long before they want jurisprudence over all of our citizens of America?
Well, it's the International Criminal Court is seeking, it's they say they don't seek universal jurisdiction, but they tether the jurisdiction to territorially. So they'll say Afghanistan's a member of the court, therefore atrocities took place in Afghanistan, therefore they have jurisdiction. But non-party states, like the United States, not party statutes, should not be reached by the ICC. That was the exact point of what we made. In fact, that's exactly what I said in the argument.
Yeah, we're going to play some of that right now.
You've confined your arguments and remarks for the main part to the position of the United States, and particularly the bilateral treaties. What of states other than the United States of America who have security forces in Afghanistan, some of whom are signatories to the Rome Statute?
Well, first, there are governments that are signatories to the Rome Statute that are also part of the interim security force agreements. If there was a conflict between those, that would be different than in a situation in the United States. The jurisdictional grants or the ceding of jurisdiction was a negotiated issue. And there was additional, that's why I'm saying it's not just the international security force agreements. We had bilateral in the United States, had bilateral. Now other governments may well have too. But in the situation that we have, it's clear that there was no jurisdiction for Afghanistan to cede to this court. If they were in fact parties to it would be almost the opposite of lex specialis if, in fact, they were bound to a multilateral treaty like the Rome Statute. But that's not the case for the United States. And I should add that the annexes to the agreements are different for some of the various countries. So that's why I was speaking specifically, Your Honor, towards the United States.
No.
All right, well, there's part of the question. There was a follow-up. So we're going to get a whole program on this so we can play all of the sound,
yeah.
And we'll have that for you, I promise you, before the end of the year. European Center for Law and Justice came up a lot during these proceedings, let me just tell you that, and so we made an impact. But we don't get to make that impact unless you're standing with us, and your support of the ACLJ allows us to do just that. So let me encourage you to go to ACLJ.org and be part of our matching challenge campaign. Any amount you donate, we're getting a matching gift for. Now, that allowed us to have 8 lawyers in Amsterdam and at The Hague to deal with this case. Your support is matched. It's doubled. So if you donate $20, it's $40. Go to ACLJ.org. Have your voice heard. We can't do it without your support. ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Talk to you tomorrow.
At the ACLJ, we remain committed to protecting life. Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion business in America, is killing unborn children and then selling their organs. We're demanding Congress investigate Planned Parenthood's gruesome practices and close this loophole. We could not mount this battle without your support. And right now, your gift to the ACLJ will be doubled through our matching challenge. Stand with the ACLJ now in the fight for life, online at ACLJ.org.